We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Did you know that only 9% of accounting firms share their net income with their entire staff? It's often a well-kept secret in accounting firms. And for the most part, the financial scorecard's locked away with the equity partners. They don't necessarily want to know what everyone's making and how much money's going around the firm. So we're asking here, what does that mean for the next generation of leaders? We're going to get into that today and a lot more on the Inside Public Accounting podcast. I'm Rob Brown, and as usual with me is my wonderful co-host, Chelsea Summers, who you know has been knee-deep in this kind of survey data all summer. Welcome, Chelsea.
Always glad to be here, Rob. And today we're going to dive into really one of my favorite reports of the year. And it's the 2025 Firm Administration Report.
There's so many great reports coming out of Inside Public Accounting. And
so many.
You definitely have the ultimate gold standard in data. And what we love to do on this show, Chelsea, don't we, is to tell the story behind the numbers, right?
Yes. And exactly. This is not just about the numbers on the top line. This report's really telling us how firms are building that foundation that's supporting their growth and their profitability and their long-term sustainability.
Yeah. So we're looking under the hood, if you like, at how firms are running day-to-day, the reality, if you like, the engine. So things like leadership, staffing, client management, business development, all the infrastructure that make firm tick.
Yeah, exactly. We're digging into it all today.
Before we dig into the findings, let's establish where this data comes from, Chelsea. You don't just pick these numbers out of thin air. This is a very robust methodology that you go through to acquire this information.
My job would be much easier if I was just grabbing numbers and running with them. But this year's report is based on 339 firms from North America. We've been running this firm administration survey for 15 years now, and each submission, just like our practice management survey, is reviewed very heavily for accuracy. If something looks off on the data set, we're going to go back to the firm and we're going to ask them questions and we're going to ask them for clarification. In this report, we're also using trim averages, so taking that middle 90% of the data set so any of the numbers aren't skewed by outliers.
So the message here is that our audience and the firms out there can really trust when they're comparing themselves with other people, everything is accurate and representative.
That's right. The firms in this report are ranging from just under 5 million to well over 150 million in revenue. So we're really able to segment the data by firm size, and we also segment them by population markets.
And how do you find those firms? We don't often talk about this, but do you go out to firms and ask them to participate? Do they put themselves forward because they want to take part? How does that work?
Yeah, both. Our repeat rate for our surveys is 90%. So most of the firms that are participating have participated for several, if not decades. But we always have new firms reaching out, especially as they're growing and they're becoming more sophisticated and they want to do data tracking internally. They then get interested in participating in surveys and doing more benchmarking of their own firm to others.
Amazing.
Always growing. We're always shrinking with all the acquisitions, but we have a very consistent data set.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, let's start where we should do at the top, the leadership picture. What are we seeing in terms of partnership structures? We hear such a lot about business models and private equity coming in and shaking things up. What are we learning?
Yeah, the partnership structures are really something that we're watching. Equity ownership for administrative personnel is something that's really rare, but it's something that's growing. About 14% of firms are now extending equity to administrative leaders, and that's up from 12% last year. Those are things like their chief marketing officer, their HR director. It's a real signal that the firms are recognizing the strategic role of these professionals and really giving them a seat at the table.
Yeah, and in the last episode, we talked about retention and what a critical thing that was. If you want to hold on to a key employee, one of the things you might have to do is give them some equity. So that's fascinating. What about partner agreements?
63% of firms updated their partner agreement within the last 3 years, and over a quarter just within the last 12 months. On the other side, 6% of firms who participated admitted that they haven't updated it in a decade or ever. In today's environment, with all the changing market trends and pressure, it's really a risk to not be looking at your partner agreements every year, if not every other year.
I'm smiling because we're an international show here, Inside Public Accounting. I'm over here in the UK. There's a lot of marketing messages telling people to change their wills and how things change all the time. And you've got to be absolutely up to date. You don't want to get caught out. So yeah, that is a risk. With so much going on, so much uncertainty, firms are obviously on top of that largely in changing partner agreements to reflect that. What about succession planning at the very top? Because we know there's a lot of people retiring, get out of the game.
Yeah, and that's still an area that firms can certainly improve on. About 55% of firms overall have a defined succession plan for their managing partner CEO role. Good news is that in those larger firms, those above 30 million, that jumps to 70%. But many smaller firms are still exposed when it comes to leadership continuity at that head role.
What about the people underneath them, the staff and the people that make up the majority of the pyramid? Are there any big trends coming out there?
Staffing is one of the most critical issues. We hear time and time again, it's what keeps the leaders up at night. 54% of staff are under 40 and 29% of staff are under 30 years old. We also are seeing about 11% of the workforce over 60 years old, which raises some long-term planning questions when you have that many individuals over the age of 60.
I was just thinking too, a statistic came out on the last show about the average age of a partner. That's coming down as well, isn't it? So firms seem to be getting a little bit younger. So yeah, what does that mean?
We're seeing a really bimodal picture. On one side, you have a large group of younger staff who's bringing in energy and new skills and some different expectations for flexibility and technology and faster career progression. But on the other hand, you have professionals nearing retirement, and the profession hasn't really fully figured out how to bridge the gap between those two.
And that must throw up some challenges for firms.
I think the age distribution is underscoring a couple challenges. First being succession planning. Firms know that they're going to lose a meaningful portion of their institutional knowledge in the next 5 to 10 years, and only a fraction are preparing for that. There's also some leadership development. If firms aren't creating some clear, appealing pathways to leadership and partner roles, they risk losing those younger talent to industries that feel more open and more transparent. It's not just about headcount. It's about balance, retaining that wisdom and the client relationships from those older professionals and giving that next generation the opportunity and the visibility to see themselves in a future at the firm. And I think that tension is really going to define some of the strategies in the next decade.
Yeah, I hear a lot about the younger generation wanting to have their hands on the steering wheel of their own career, and they want career options and interesting work, and the dynamic is certainly shifting. I feel like asking a stupid question. A firm's planning to grow. They're all planning to grow, I'm guessing. Nobody plans to get smaller. But can you put some numbers on that, Chelsea?
Yeah. So 76% of the firms that participated are going to increase their staff next year. About 30% are projecting more than 5% growth next year, but 12% are planning for reductions. So not everybody is in expansion mode right now.
But we talk about fee earners there. There's an admin side as well as a whole support function to accounting firms. Tell us about those.
Those larger firms tend to have more robust administrative teams. They have dozens of full-time equivalents across HR and marketing, internal technology and accounting. The smaller firms under $5 million in revenue might only have two total admin. Interestingly, the firm administrator role is more common in the smaller firms. About 52% of firms under 20 million employ one, where those bigger firms are tending to lead more to a chief operating officer, a COO role, and about 54% of firms above the $20 million mark have a COO on staff. So we really see that dividing line there.
Yeah, the talent pipeline is such an interesting conversation. You and I interviewed Lexi Kessler recently of the AICPA, and she was involved in their talent advisory pipeline. She talked about the 2040 project that they're doing to project ahead and see what the accounting firm and profession of the future is going to look like. So I'm interested in recruitment and how firms are finding new talent out there, because it's very competitive.
It is, and it's varying depending on the firms. About 85% of firms above 30 million have dedicated recruiters inside of their firm. Yeah. And in those smaller firms, just about 26%. Shows that some firms are investing in talent acquisition. But dedicated recruiters are just a small piece of that story. Many of the firms are leaning into college campus recruiting, with 87% of our firms having some kind of formal internship program. And on average, about half of those interns are offered full-time roles within the firm. That pipeline is very critical, especially for those mid-sized firms, where those internships are really one of the most reliable feeders for their entry-level staff.
Yeah, in-house recruiting is an area that I've really seen taken off. But then I wonder what kind of shape the recruitment industry's in, because we would have gone out and got them to hire for us and get headhunters and all kinds of things. What do we know about what firms are doing with their external spend when it comes to talent, Chelsea?
Some firms, particularly those in the top 100, are starting to allocate real budgets to professional recruiters, those search firms, and others are still really spending that on internal networks. It creates a divide in how quickly and efficiently firms can respond to those talent shortages. When we talk about recruiting investments, it's not just whether you have a recruiter on staff. It's about whether you're building a system that's repeatable for your openings, and you're investing in your technologies, and you're making recruiting the priority firm-wide, not just something that HR is doing on the side and they'll take care of it for you. It needs to be firm-wide initiatives.
And I've had the phrase, you may have come across this as well, is that recruitment's everybody's job. Talent is everyone's job. You're not just in HR, you're recruiting it. Constant conversations all the time. You are always the ambassador of the brand. You must hear that a lot too.
Yes, yes. And it's all of our responsibilities to make accounting a career that everybody wants to stay in or go into, from the high school age to college kids to those that may be looking for a second career or left the accounting profession, those boomerangs that we're trying to pull back because maybe the grass wasn't actually greener on the other side.
Very well said. We can all tell a better story. Let's talk about the unsung heroes in all of this, the clients. Bless them. They are doing their thing. There's so much happening around them. What are we learning about how clients are dealing with all of this? They're forming big portfolios and books of businesses for these firms. What do the statistics tell us?
In the majority of firms, about 80%, they have some kind of formal client acceptance process, which we think is really a best practice.
That's onboarding, you mean?
Yes, yeah. Correct. Or some criteria. If you're going to bring on a client, they need to meet these criteria in order to be a successful client at the firm.
Right.
So can't just bring on anybody. It has to meet some process throughout the firm. And about 57% of firms are categorizing their clients. So an A client, a B client, a C client. And that helps them manage their portfolios, which is up slightly from last year. Putting a letter on those clients are helping you identify the ones that are profitable and the ones you want to keep versus the ones who maybe aren't the best fit for your firm anymore.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because you've got A, B, and C classifications, but you've also got the D clients, which is the ones that firms would rather not have. So the consultants out there, I guess, would be telling accounting firms to fire your clients, cull them, get rid of the non-profitable ones. And we have talked about this before. How firms are firing their clients is an interesting thing here. Have you got any updated stats?
We do. 47% of firms have a formal process every year to prune or cull their client list.
Call it pruning? Do they call it culling? Does it have a name?
Whatever kind euphemism they want to use.
Yeah.
But firing, letting go, saying you're no longer a good fit for our firm.
Mm.
On average, it's about $290,000 in revenue. But obviously for those larger firms with more revenue, bigger clients, that looks like about $600,000 in revenue a year. That's a deliberate capacity, and it helps to free up the staff for higher value work.
So there's a threshold there below which they would become D clients and maybe open to some pruning or culling. That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
What are clients saying about all of this? Is there any feedback they're giving firms?
Unfortunately, it's not widespread. 22% of firms are using a net promoter score, where larger firms are more likely to use it, but firms aren't systemically measuring client satisfaction.
No. And it seems so simple, doesn't it, to ask your clients how you're doing, but surprisingly not many firms do it. Let's hit growth for a moment. I know it just doesn't come from retention and holding on to your good people so you can grow organically. There's a certain amount of bringing in new business from the outside. So tell us what firms are doing in the area of business development, Chelsea.
52% of our firms, so a little over half, are tracking new business development opportunities through a formal pipeline. But again, the larger firms, more sophistication, about 3/4 of them are doing that, and compared to less in the smaller and mid-sized firms. Pipeline is not just a fancy CRM you invest in or a spreadsheet of your new clients. It's also going to be the discipline of tracking your leads and your proposals and your close rates. Larger firms treat business development like a science. And in those smaller firms, they rely more on those partner networks and informal conversations to drive growth.
And when we said earlier that recruitment is everyone's job, I've always been of the opinion that business development is everyone's job. Everyone can open a door to another client, have another conversation with a prospect. Okay, so you're saying that some firms are tracking it, some are not. What are the key challenges here when it comes to business development?
When they don't have a pipeline in place, it's very hard to forecast or manage your growth in a kind of predictable way. You don't know which opportunities are stalling, where you're winning, if there's certain service lines or niches where you're really finding more success, or what true conversion rates look like. So business development looks a lot more reactive instead of strategic in those situations.
We've talked about incentivizing key employees by giving them equity and giving them a stake in the game. I'm just wondering, with the leaders in business development, are they being incentivized? What's happening there?
In some cases, yeah, that could be an administrative staff that it would make sense to give equity to. But only about 20% of firms have a dedicated business development director.
Right.
In those larger firms, it's a little over half, 56%. But what is common is incentive programs. About 81% of firms are offering business development incentive programs for their staff. And 14% of firms are even extending those payouts for CLAF for their new clients to the lifetime of the client. That way, growth is tied to long-term retention of that client, not just bringing them in the door, but really keeping them there.
Yeah. So many drivers have changed, so many statistics here. Can we wrap up for our audience and maybe zoom out on some of the big picture metrics from this survey?
Yeah, one of the things I want to dig into is measures of profitability. So 59% of firms measure their profitability at a client level, and 42% of firms are tracking it per staff member. But when it comes to transparency, it's very traditional. Only 9% of firms are true open book, where net income is shared firm-wide. In most firms, about 69%, they keep that profitability and that net income only for the equity partner group.
Well, that's the question we asked at the top of the show, isn't it? How secret is this information that firms make? So it sounds like there's still a long way to go when it comes to transparency across the firm and even across the profession.
Yeah, there is. And I think firms have a chance to really change the game here. If we're serious about attracting and keeping those next generation of leaders, financial transparency can't be a locked box inside the firm. Younger professionals don't just want to know what their billable hours are. They want to understand how their firms are being run, where that money goes, and how their contributions are really impacting the bottom line.
Yeah, I'm hearing that too. They want to stay in the game. They want some authority. They want a voice. They want to be involved in decisions. And this plays to retention, doesn't it? If you want to hold on to people, you can't marginalize them and keep them out of discussions like this.
Yeah, and when that transparency is limited just to those partners, it makes leadership feel like a closed club. And that's not appealing to the ambitious and talented professionals who have lots of options outside of public accounting. If firm leaders are, they want that leadership track to be exciting for their staff, they have to pull back those curtains a little bit. Sharing more widely, even just firm level revenue or profitability metrics, I think that helps to send a message that leadership is attainable. And if the firm trusts its people enough to share the scorecard.
I'm glad you said trust, because I was thinking, what are some of the reasons they wouldn't share? And it must be some kind of fear or giving too much power to their employees. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that accountants are inherently a little bit conservative, and they made this partner level, and they feel like they're maybe making a lot of money, a lot more than they ever thought they would make. And Sharing that feels almost like not something they should be doing. Where I think we should celebrate it. You're an owner in a business. You're an owner in a successful business, and your compensation reflects that time and that energy and those clients that you brought in and that risk that you're taking to be an owner. But if we want that younger generation to feel like ownership is attainable and something they want to do, just seeing partners work 3,000 hours and be burnt out, but not seeing that upside is really something that's doing a disservice to the entire profession.
Yeah, that's very well put. Do you have some figures on exactly how many firms share their revenue across the firm?
I do. 49% of firms are sharing.
You have answers to everything, Chelsea, don't you?
So many answers, so many data spinning in my head. 49% of firms sharing their revenues firm-wide. And I think this lack of transparency is really creating a gap. This next generation, they expect openness. They want context for the work that they're doing and clarifying their value. And I think if that gap isn't addressed, firms are really going to risk on losing out on future partners. As the person who takes that revenue and aggregates it and puts out a list and shares it on my website, the fact that these firms aren't sitting down firm-wide and saying, hey, here's our revenue and here's how we grew this year and here's what our plans are for next year. In an environment where staff are Googling things or looking on social media, that information is out there, and that lack of transparency inside the firm to share it, I think is really hindering some of the firms.
Yeah. Well, Chelsea Summers, you've done a brilliant walkthrough with this 2025 Firm Administration Report, Inside Public Accounting, just some excellent research. And what you've really done here is show how firms are managing not just their clients, but their people, their governance, their growth strategies. It's been a real privilege getting behind the curtain on this.
It's been my pleasure. And for the listeners who want more details on what we went over today, the complete report is available to order on our website, and it has even more breakdowns on data by firm size and by markets.
That sounds very juicy. And if you have questions about the show, you can find us wherever we are, and we'll see if we can field some of those questions. But on behalf of Chelsea and I want to thank you for joining us on this journey with the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. Do subscribe, do share the love so you don't miss out on things, and we can go to a wider audience as well. We're going to keep digging into that data that shapes the profession, telling the stories and the reasons behind the numbers. But until next time, keep building a stronger firm from the inside out.
Thanks, Rob. Things or looking on social media, that information is out there, and that lack of transparency inside the firm to share it, I think is really hindering some of the firms.
Yeah. Well, Chelsea Summers, you've done a brilliant walkthrough with this 2025 Firm Administration Report, Inside Public Accounting, just some excellent research. And what you've really done here is show how firms are managing not just their clients, but their people, their governance, their growth strategies. It's been a real privilege getting behind the curtain on this.
It's been my pleasure. And for the listeners who want more details on what we went over today, the complete report is available to order on our website, and it has even more breakdowns on data by firm size and by markets.
That sounds very juicy. And if you have questions about the show, you can find us wherever we are, and we'll see if we can field some of those questions. But on behalf of Chelsea and I want to thank you for joining us on this journey with the Inside Public Accounting Podcast. Do subscribe, do share the love so you don't miss out on things, and we can go to a wider audience as well. We're going to keep digging into that data that shapes the profession, telling the stories and the reasons behind the numbers. But until next time, keep building a stronger firm from the inside out.
Thanks, Rob.